I am delighted to welcome to the programme, long overdue, a chat with this lady, Nolene Blackwell, Director of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Nolene, good morning and welcome to Northside Today.
Good morning, Donny. Thanks very much. Delighted to talk to you.
Nolene, your work, a lot of people will have known you from your time with FLAC and the excellent work you did there. Coming from FLAC to the Rape Crisis Centre, was it a big transformation for you?
Yeah, well, it's of course it is. Every change in job, you think that it looks the same as the previous job, but when you come in, it's a different set of circumstances. I suppose the common thing, the thing that I feel is kind of the thread through both, is that both of them, both the job in FLAC, working with people accessing justice, and the current job, working with victims of sexual violence, both involve really fundamental human rights for people. So that people who have a right to be free of violence in this current job are not, because of sexual violence, because of the way we don't talk about sexual abuse, about the way we don't have enough facilities for people who suffer it, about the way our kids aren't taught about it. So while it's a big change, and while I came into an organisation that was really badly damaged by the recession, where a fifth of its funding was taken from it at a time when the need was greater than ever, it makes it very hard to try and identify how do we manage to keep the services going, to keep the prevention work going. So funding is a big issue, but in both cases, people who deserved better and who were entitled to better were not allowed to have access to the services that they needed, were put in a way of danger because of lack of knowledge and information. And those are the things that, with the various people here in the Rape Crisis Centre and all our supporters around Dublin, around the country, we really feel we have an opportunity now to try and improve the situation, improve the services for victims of sexual violence where they need them, improve people's capacity to talk about the issue, and then improve the capacity to stop it happening in the first place.
Yeah, I remember speaking on a couple of occasions with your predecessor, Senator Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, as she is now. She was just ordinary plain Ellen O'Malley Dunlop that time. And
she didn't quite make it into the shadow. Oh. She nearly did. She nearly did. What she actually has taken up since then is she's the chairperson of the National Women's Council of Ireland. So she's in a very prominent position to continue her work for women's rights.
But it was a thing, Nolene, that struck me when I was talking to Ellen on, I think, two or three occasions, actually, in around the time you're talking about.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand for the life of me why the funding was cut for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Number one, the way it was slashed, I mean, as in the amount of money you lost, because you weren't really coming from a high base in the first place anyway. You were taking a small amount of funding and cutting it even further. So my memory of it, Nolene, is it practically left you with nothing.
Well, it took about a fifth of it away. And as you say, Donny, the key thing was it wasn't like this organisation or the service was well funded in the first place. It was not. It was not sufficient to do the job it had to do. And to take that funding away during the recession caused a very serious reduction in the level of service available for people who were very vulnerable and needed the help. Now, I have to say this, the amount of funding that was taken from the Rape Crisis Centre was about the same as was taken from other equally vital health services. So I suppose in my last job, I did come to the conclusion when I was working with FLAC that in fact the regime that was imposed on Ireland in those days failed to take account of the most vulnerable in our society. I gave out about it a lot when I was in FLAC. I continue to give out about it. The most vulnerable people are often the most hidden. Only four people, like Near FM, who constantly champion the things that need to be championed. Only four local community groups, only four fundraising. Our people continued to give us money when money was hard to come by. This organisation would have closed down because the state went about this with the pushing of the European Union and the International Monetary Fund, went about this in a way that failed to recognise the most vulnerable and to say, we won't cut those services. We weren't the only ones cut, but cutting this, I can tell you only about this service, and this service suffered badly. Therapists had to take, of course, cuts in their own salaries, in their own expenses. The people who continued to work here, people had to be let go. We were scraping along the bottom all along, trying to keep a service going for people. So we did. I mean, the therapy services for the centre are mainly based in Leeson Street, but we kept the outreach centres in Talla and in the Civic Centre in Northside going during the recession. We kept the national 24-hour helpline going, but only really with the huge help of fundraisers, volunteers, people helping out. And it's only now that we are starting to see a return to pre-recession levels of funding, which, as you say, wasn't adequate even then, and which is even more inadequate now as more and more people begin to realise their need of the service.
Yeah, I think it was what the then Minister for Finance, Michael Noonan, termed the low-hanging fruit, Nolene.
Yeah, yeah. You could take it from us because we couldn't stop anyone taking it. Yeah. And because we were a voluntary organisation. So many things were done in a way that was not respectful of people and was not respectful of the vulnerable in our midst. And all your listeners who were depending on any health service will know that for sure, that there was no bottom line. They used to say that. They said, there is no red line. There is no budget that will not be targeted. And there should have been. We should not have allowed people who are damaged in their most inmost selves, whose dignity is really trampled on, who have huge emotional health problems as a result of sexual violence. We should not have been the society that said, we will not help those and we will actually just strip the funding. Like, there is no equivalent state organisation to what we're... Oh, well, there is actually. There is a national counselling service. But its numbers went through the roof as well. So I suppose all we have to do is try and see, can we keep reminding the state that which or whether we are a civilized society that does try to provide for the most vulnerable in our society. I mean, most of the people who come into us can't pay what they would pay to a private counseling service. And that's fine. We want to be there for those people. But we want to be there for anyone who needs us. We're a specialist service. It's a holistic service we give here in the centre, and we want to be here. And it's important that it not be forgotten that the way in which funding cuts were made during that last great recession damaged the capacity of people to manage their own lives. And one of the things we would say is that it's bad for people in themselves if they can't get the help that they need when they need it. But it's also bad for us as a society. Someone who is shocked, traumatised, hurt, unable to cope as a result of sexual violence is somebody who also can't work as well as they could otherwise, They can't have relationships as well as they could otherwise. They can't be included in our society. So it's actually, it was not only a bad and a cruel thing to do, it was short-sighted as well for our society. If you delay people in their recovery, or if you make it harder for them to recover, you're damaging the whole of our society. And that's why we're a valuable service today, that if people understand that sexual violence causes real harm, really, it can damage a person to their core. It's also important to know that healing is possible. You can't make it go away. It, you know, once it's happened, it has happened. But people can heal. People can cope better. And it is important that people realize that they can reach out. They can reach out to us on the helpline or to our therapy services in Coolock or in Dublin. They can reach out to other rape crisis centres around the country. They can get confidential help for themselves. And that will help them to cope better with their lives for the most part. Now, you know, we can't guarantee anything for anyone, but we know from nearly 40 years' experience that people will cope better after being involved in the sort of healing services that they need themselves. And sometimes that might be as simple, Donny, as saying to someone on the phone, this happened to me. Sometimes people only need to say that, and sometimes people need more. But it's good for people, and it's also good for their families, it's good for their communities, it's good for their workplaces, it's good for our society, if people heal.
Yeah, I'll come to the Me Too campaign later, Nolene, but I just want to read three little snippets that I have here in front of me. And it's in relation to your good self, Nolene. A solicitor who served for 10 years as head of FLAC. You're a trustee of Frontline, the International Foundation for Human Rights, and you're a vice president of the International Federation for Human Rights. And you also sit on the board of the Immigrant Council of Ireland, and you're an adjunct professor at Dublin City University School of Law and Government. The then chairman of FLAC, Peter Ward, senior counsel, said that you made a deeply significant and lasting contribution to the promotion of equal access to justice in Ireland. That is a fair resume, Nolene. With those things in mind, I would like to ask you, and it's probably, I should have maybe ran this by you earlier, but did you see the recent report or documentary done by CNN in relation to the slave trade at the moment?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I've read a good bit about it. It's just one of those things that's coming up from underground now.
With that in mind, though, Nolene, and the reason I want to bring it up is that, excuse me, I would think that as director of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre that maybe not this week or next week, but certainly in the near future or near to medium future, that the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre may have to deal with some of these young women who have been trafficked into Ireland for sex.
We're dealing with them, Donny. We're dealing with them. It has been a feature in Ireland for a number of years. Women from, principally women, or at least I only know about women, who have been seduced or cajoled or conned, probably is the best word, into leaving their home countries, being told that they would get jobs in Europe, going with the blessing of their family sometimes, crossing on dangerous, dirty journeys across the continents, and ending up enslaved in Ireland, at the mercy of pimps at the mercy of people who are exploiting them. People are brought over for, they're trafficked over for labour, and they're trafficked over for sex. And these people, normally young people, but a variety of people, have no choice. They are, it's not fit to talk about on a Monday morning or any time of the day. They are raped. They are forced into incredible indignities, and it is nothing but slavery. It is an absolute disgrace, and it's why in the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre we were very anxious to be part of a campaign that took place. There's a new piece of legislation went through this year about sexual offences. And the only contentious piece of the legislation, really, it was about, a lot of it was about new offences for internet grooming of children, internet pornography, better protection for witnesses in court. But there was one very contentious piece in it, and that was about criminalising the purchase of sex rather than the sale of sex. So instead of charging a person, a woman, with being a prostitute, the new law says, I will charge you for buying sex from somebody else. And the reason we were so involved in saying this was necessary was we see the outcomes sometimes where those girls get away, where they manage to hook up with organisations, principally like Ruhama, which works with women who are working in prostitution, where people can escape from that. And we see the level of harm that has happened to those women. When we see the level at which it is so hard for them to get away from the people who are enslaving them, we have to say this: the way that this will stop is if you follow the money. If you follow the money, if you say to people, don't buy sex in Dublin because there's a real good chance you're buying it from someone who is enslaved. If that's what happens, then it will stop young girls, older girls, women being trafficked in and their bodies sold by their slave merchants.
Yeah, it really is. I think you used the correct word there, Noeline. It's absolutely disgusting. Now, I mean, it was never right at any time, and I'm not. Don't get me wrong here, but to think that in 2017, going into 2018, that still pertains, it is absolutely disgusting. I mean, I really did think that we had left all that behind us a couple of hundred years ago, but it would appear no.
Yeah, and slavery, you see, will happen because I just think, Tony, in some ways, they're all a bit of a piece. You know, if someone can, if some people will abuse power if they get away with it. And if you get the chance to exploit somebody else to that degree and you make money out of it, then it is going to happen. And that's where we have to be watchful as a society, and our criminal law has to be watchful to try and make sure it doesn't happen. Like the traffic in people is the second, I think, most valuable trade in the world. It is more valuable than the trade of arms and less valuable than the trade of drugs. Now, I know I've got that wrong. Someone who's listening will know what is right. But it's up there as one of the most valuable trades in the world, the illegal trafficking in people. And if you allow it to continue, it will continue because somebody will be able to exploit some other human being. And if you say, we will stop it happening. We stopped normal slavery 200 years ago. Like, there was slavery in Britain in the 18th century, and it stopped because it was made illegal. The only way to stop the trafficking in people is for people to stop buying sex. And the same is true of labour, to stop going to places where the prices are so cheap that it's clear the labour is forced labour, to ensure that we have ways for people to exit these exploitative conditions. Because one of the fears people have is, if they're brought in illegally, they're exploited like that, and then they're afraid to leave because they don't have any papers or documents. So you have to have systems to allow those sort of people to leave, so that they can be protected themselves and be safe, and so that the traffickers can be brought before the law.
Yeah, and of course, the other side of it too, Noeline, is that they are they're in fear and dread of going to the authorities because of the fact that they're illegally in the country, and they're afraid of the double-edged sword of finishing up in prison because they're here illegally, or maybe worse, being deported back to somewhere that they are in fear of being killed.
Exactly, deported back, and maybe if they're deported back, sent out again to be further enslaved at a later stage. So it's one of the things where you have to look at the big picture. And in Ireland, actually, where somebody is seen as a trafficker, right throughout the European Union, there is a special category for people who are trafficked, and to give them time to rest and recover, and then to allow them to go into a special programme where they are protected while an investigation might be going on. So, you know, there are some systems there, but they're very complex. And it's very hard for somebody who's living in fear, who's bullied, who might be put on drugs, who is being raped on a regular basis, who doesn't know the language, who doesn't know anyone in the country, very hard for them to recognise that there may be a way out. And this is even true kind of at a smaller level as well. You don't have to be a non-national to be afraid of reporting. That again and again, we come across people here in the either through the national 24-hour helpline, or people who are coming into the therapy that's offered by the centre, and they're afraid to report it, because even if you don't have the added complication of the illegality or the trafficking, it is still such a disruptive thing to do. They feel, they say, I don't want to say it because I don't want to break up a family. I mean, that case that was decided last week, that was what one of the victims said. She didn't want to break up a family. People don't want to report on their friends or their bosses or various other people. So even reporting generally is just not a simple thing to do. But we still say, like, come and get yourself safe, get yourself in order, and then see, do you want to report it on further? Because without a doubt, crime continues in places where it isn't reported.
Noeline, two items before I let you go, and I am so, so grateful for the amount of time you gave us this morning.
Noeline. Oh, no, gosh, I feel you're allowing me to produce all my pet theories, Donny, but yeah, thank you.
Is there times of the year, Noeline, and you're in the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre now long enough to be able to gauge these things, when we'll say there's a spike in demand for your services and there's a lull, or does it run at a constant level all the time?
All right. So sometimes there is a time of year. This time of year is a difficult time. First of all, Christmas is difficult for an awful lot of people, and it brings bad memories for people, so that can create an increase in the numbers of people who want to contact us. After Christmas, we will see a spike. There will be people who will have been raped and sexually assaulted over Christmas who will be in contact with us when the so-called festive season is over. And the saddest thing about those, in some ways, is that sometimes it won't even have happened on purpose. It won't be somebody setting out to actually rape somebody. It will simply be somebody who has too much drink taken, who isn't careful, who isn't listening, and who forces somebody else to have sex. That will happen. It happens now. It will also happen in the summer. The summer tends to be kind of a peak period. And then the other thing is, it depends on circumstances. If a case is decided in the courts, if a sentence isn't long enough or too long, if something like the Me Too thing, and we'll probably come back to that a little bit later, if that comes up, then people will be triggered, is what we say. But sometimes I like the word inspired as well. They will be inspired to call on us for help.
Nolene, so, we've a minute and a half left, and you touched on it there, the Me Too. Give us your thoughts on that.
All right. So this is where, once a disclosure was made about that, Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein, a whole lot of other women in this case started saying Me Too, and the hashtag Me Too started to trend on Twitter and on Facebook and other social media, to the extent that the Me Too campaign won the Time Person of the Year award, the people behind it. And what it was in some ways people recognizing that they weren't the only ones, because a lot of sexual abuse happens in quiet, hidden places. And in this case, people realized it was not just an isolated incident. It didn't only happen to them. It happened to others. And it was okay to own the fact that it happened to you, that it's not your fault. Something wrong was done to you. And you're able to say it was done to others as well, so you can say Me Too. So I think that it has been one of the ways in which we have taken a step forward in our societies, North America, Western Europe, where we're able to say a little bit more easily, yes, I was a victim of sexual violence. Yes, it happened to me. No, it wasn't my fault. Me too. I'm out there. I want this to stop.
Nolene.
And that's where, if we can get people to report, if we can get people to talk about it, we can stop abuse if somebody reports it. Weinstein could not have gone on so long without getting away with it. It took decades before the New York Times was felt brave enough to publish what everybody seems to have known was going on. You hear that here as well in relation to people. You hear everyone knew it was going on and no one was able to report. We have to report, because with report, you stop abuse.
Nolene, we have 20 seconds. Can you give us the contact details for anybody who wants to avail of the services of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre?
So the very best way to do it is through the National Helpline, 1800 77 88 88. That's 1-800-77-88-88.
Nolene Blackwell, Director of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Nolene, once again, thank you so much for being so generous with your time this morning. Happy Christmas to you and everybody in there.
And happy Christmas to all at Near FM as well.
God bless you, Nolene. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.